Hello, everybody. We're taking over the BBC Irish podcast this week because there has been loads of mental health news going on, and apparently we are experts. So for this week only, it's two mentals on a microphone. I'm Seanine, and
I'm Mark Brown. What do we know about mental health?
We know that you... What do we know about mental health? We know that waiting rooms and doctor surgeries are always blue and stick right up your bum when they make you stick there for 45 minutes. And we also know that two tea bags are better than one. Always.
So what's happened this week then that's been big for mental health?
A big head. Well, a massive head. Heads together has been everywhere. And it kind of seemed to come out of nowhere, I think. All of a sudden, again, people are talking about mental health. Prince Harry opened up about getting counselling after the death of his mother, but not directly after. It took him years of struggling, which he talked about, said that he, you know, had a breakdown, felt very aggressive. And so he's been speaking out about getting help to cope with his grief. And the mantra has been breaking stigma. I think both me and Mark have opinions on that.
We do. I mean, so the background with the Prince Harry stuff was kind of really interesting. He did a sort of long podcast interview with Bryony Gordon for The Telegraph.
Yep.
And it kind of was trailed the night before as a sort of big admission. And it was seen as being very, very kind of groundbreaking. And it's part of a sort of wider campaign that the royals, Prince Harry, Prince William and associated other royals, about kind of challenging the idea of mental health stigma. It's kind of quite a complicated idea in some ways and quite a simple idea in other ways. They're often talking about the feeling that people have that they can't open up and speak about their experiences because they're worried about being judged. And I think, like, for both of us, that's not really been the case because we, either because we were very clever and very brave and very with the zeitgeist and early adopters, or because we were really stupid.
Now, saying that, I did get fired from a job for having a mental health problem, so it's not quite been the case.
You were fired?
Yeah, I was fired. Twice, in fact. It's always hard to kind of prove it, you know, it's because you have mental health problems. But the first time, this was when I was on one of my many temp contracts after I'd come out of hospital, and I really wasn't well enough to work. But I kept trying because I couldn't get benefits, and I needed to eat food, as you do. And one of them... I'm not going to say where I worked, but I had started writing my blog, which is Secret Life of a Manic Depressive. Don't need to dig very far to find out what the topic of that one is. Basically, may as well have mental flashing light at the top. And when I looked at my search terms, it was a very specific search term that could only have been done by someone I worked with. And then the next day, there was a bit of a chat and I was let go.
That is absolutely awful.
Another one was when I mean, to be fair, shouldn't really have been working. I wasn't well enough and I was going through a manic episode and I drew loads of moustaches onto sticky paper and pasted them all over my face, all over the community, all over my computer monitor and then danced down the corridor. So that was probably more justified, I think, in terms of, you know, ending my contract at the time. But it was great. I thought I was Diana Ross. It was I went to like Paper Chase and spent about £100 on pencils afterwards.
So this is one of the really, really interesting things about the whole thing about fighting stigma. There's certainly some people who see the stuff with the royals as being kind of trying to make the idea of mental ill health kind of acceptable and making it kind of something that's it's very, very normal to speak about. But when we kind of look at Prince Harry talking about his very, very difficult experiences, they're very much in the realm of I was very, very sad, it was very, very tough, I found it very hard to continue, I felt very angry, I felt very abandoned. That they're emotions and feelings that a lot of people can identify with. And I think there's an interesting thing that happens with the stuff around mental health, that what you get is a kind of division between the ideas of mental ill health that are considered to be kind of acceptable and the ideas that are kind of a bit more difficult. And I think that the experience that some of us have is that the things that we've been through and the things that happen to us in regards to our mental health are just kind of on the wrong side of being easy to empathise with and kind of on the wrong side of being able to just for people to go, yeah, I really, really understand that. Because sometimes mental ill health is really baffling and confusing. And it involves saying and doing sometimes things that other people just really can't get their head around. Looking back on it, and this is always really, really uncomfortable, like, what exactly was kind of going through your head when you were having that experience of sort of dancing down the corridor and stuff like that?
I thought I was being hilarious, basically, having no sense of appropriateness of where I was and what I was doing. It's a really blurry time. I can't remember much of it very well. I think I do remember sending lots of emails that day about my great ideas. And then once I'd finished all my work, thinking, my monitor looks boring, so I'm going to draw mustaches on sticky bits and make it nice. And then, wow, my face feels boring, so why don't I draw sticky mustaches? And I look so fabulous with my sticky mustaches, why not show it off to the directors by dancing down the corridor and then interrupting their meeting? I forgot to mention that bit. It was joyful. It was like, and this is, obviously manic episodes are not always joyful, and there's a bit of a misconception that it is like, hooray, I'm so fabulous and having a great time. It has consequences like being fired for running around with mustaches on your face. But in that moment, in that day, I remember being very joyful and happy and just thinking I was being very funny and charming and brilliant, as usual, obviously. But yeah, it had consequences. And I think, like, to an extent, some experiences are beyond the normal realm. Like, you could say depression's just being really, 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 really sad. Mm. Mania is like being really, really, really happy or really agitated. Psychosis is, you know, that moment when you wake up in the morning and you're not sure you're dreaming.
Mm.
And you're not sure if you can hear someone calling your name in the street. It is on the realm of normality. And I think framing it in that way might help people to understand. Obviously, people have more extreme experiences of that and ones that are destructive. But also, people also have value in their experiences of psychosis or mania or even depression. It's not always, I'll probably get castigated for this. Obviously, it is destructive and can, you know, really affect someone's life and destroy someone's life, but people can find positive meaning in those experiences as well.
Yeah, so I was kind of quite lucky. I've only really kind of experienced those kind of very, very strange thoughts a few times. I remember I was much younger, I was unemployed, I was really unwell, and I became convinced that I had a special relationship with animals. And I sort of went out one day and I went to the park and this dog ran all the way across the park and dropped a ball at my feet. And I went, right, that's it. That's true. Right, I'm going to go to another park. So I went to Greenwich Park, and there's like a deer park in Greenwich Park. It's behind all these kind of hedges and stuff like that. And I was kind of feeling quite weird and a bit strange and a bit kind of, you know, not myself. And I walked through this kind of archway in this hedge, and about 15 squirrels ran out at once.
Sounds terrifying, actually.
But it was wonderful because the squirrels all ran out and they all sort of looked at me. Then one started climbing up my leg and I was like, oh my God. And I sort of put my finger out and I was expecting a bluebird to land on it.
You were the king of squirrels in Greenwich Park.
But it was just like, it's like, you know, luckily for me, that was just a kind of very, very whimsical kind of idea of reference and didn't last for very long. And kind of looking back, I can kind of say that was kind of quite funny, because I was quite lucky in that wasn't necessarily a terribly disruptive thing to experience and think about.
So how do we get from squirrels, bluebirds, manic episodes, dancing, and back to Prince Harry?
Well, I'm sure Harry likes all of those things. He's a very exciting young man. I've seen him. He likes dressing up, unfortunately.
And his gran's got a lot of deer and owns all the parks in London. So.
Well, so basically it was his nan's
Squirrels
that I was looking at.
I think the way the conversation has gone in terms of stigma is this kind of thing about opening up. And then it doesn't really go much further than that. It's kind of, then what do you do after you've opened up? You know, everyone's reaching out all the time, but then it's like, okay, now people are reaching out and opening up. And what now? Where do they reach out to? Once they've opened up, what happens? And I do think that the conversation about opening up is still a valid one and a good one to have. When I was looking up the Prince Harry thing, I stumbled across the Daily Mail and the first comment upvoted was, what happened to the British stiff upper lip? As I was like, kind of the point, guys.
Well, popular professional troll, Katie Hopkins did a piece for the Mail the day afterwards, talking about how we are the country of the stiff upper lip and you know, keep calm and carry on. And we seem to be having a kind of weird public competition to say who's the most messed up and who can cope the least. This is, you know, so the wrong thing to be doing. But I think the stigma thing gets really complicated because the stuff about opening up from a personal perspective is often focused on trying to escape from feeling shameful.
Mm-hmm.
And if there's one thing that the Royals getting behind this anti-stigma thing can do is kind of open up that realm of not being kind of ashamed. But that often doesn't meet very well with the idea of making things change and be better.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know if you noticed on Twitter, there was a lot of people who thought the Prince Harry stuff was great. And there's also a lot of people who said, well, yeah, that's fantastic, but he is, you know, he's probably going to be able to get the help that he needs more quickly than me.
I think that's something that has been said for years. Whenever like a celebrity or anyone high profile opens up about mental health, it's kind of, that's great, but you're not in the NHS on a big waiting list. You know, you will get the best help accessible, available, and it doesn't really reflect the reality. But I think I'm softening. I'm definitely getting softer in my old age. Whereas I used to be pretty scornful about this. And to an extent, I am still, because I think the whole mental health isn't in isolation. And, you know, people's circumstances, like their housing and their economic circumstances, history, background, everything contributes so much to it. But my first reaction was a bit warm, fuzzy. I don't know why. I don't know what's happening to me that I've become this person who goes, oh, Prince Harry's talking about his mum. But I think even though you have access to all those things and you don't have to be at the mercy of the NHS and DWP, I think it's good to have a conversation that unites everybody in the sense that everyone has felt grief, everyone has been there. I would imagine people like Prince Harry, young men, that is a really valuable discussion to have about bottling up your feelings. But yeah, back to what you were saying, then it is, but then where do those bottled up feelings go when there is no help? But seeing on Twitter and Facebook and stuff, people are having these peer support conversations, which is, you know, that's something, that is a step. When you wouldn't have been able to have those conversations or not felt as comfortable in a public place saying, I struggled, I suffered, I felt this way, I did that kind of thing. That's progress. That's something.
I have to admit, I've always been absolutely terrible at bottling my feelings up because I am basically rubbish at being a man in that respect.
Well, there you go. I mean, see what you just said? That's the view, isn't it? It is.
Yeah.
You should bottle your feelings up because you're a man.
And it's really weird for me looking at Harry, because I have very similar kind of warm and fuzzy feelings, because, you know, my mother died about a month before his mother died. So there's kind of, you know, a kind of linkage in grief there. But also kind of, for me, kind of weird comparison, because I look at it and I kind of go, yeah, I can see how the pressure on you led you to the way that you were and the things that you felt. The pressures on me were kind of different. And this is kind of interesting, this conversation about different people will be accepted differently for when they talk about their feelings. And it also depends on what kind of feelings they're talking about. And I think it's always really weird when you have to or you want to tell someone about the weird stuff that happens in your head. And you kind of find yourself going, yeah, you're probably not going to get this bit, but this is what happened to me, and it's really weird. And it's why I think a lot of us find it easier to talk to each other mm-hmm. about this stuff than talking to civilians. So the thing that I wonder about is where we're actually trying to get to with this. Because if we do get to everyone being open, there's kind of going to be a lot of people who don't experience mental health difficulties are going to have to do kind of quite a lot of listening to people saying, actually, I woke up one morning and I definitely travelled through time. Or, I heard my own dead parents sitting on my shoulder telling me what to have for breakfast, or any of the kind of weird things or the distressing things that you go through. Like, where are we trying to get to? Because I think we do get to a point where there's a kind of pushback and people go, well, yeah, we can kind of go this far. in kind of normalizing this stuff. I can get the grief stuff, I can get the kind of loneliness stuff, I can get the sadness stuff. But then the other stuff is kind of much more difficult and challenging. So where do you reckon we're trying to get to with this?
I don't know. Everyone wanting to be depressed because it's cool. No, nothing like that.
One of the things that's interesting about the Heads Together stuff is it's focused on individual people talking about their individual stories. And so we've had Harry, we had Lady Gaga in a really, really weird bit of footage. I don't know if you saw it.
No, I didn't. Was it?
It was put out online about 2 hours before we announced the general election, so it kind of got a bit lost. And it was William, and Lady Gaga was talking to him and was very well informed and was talking, you know, very, very cogently and in great detail about various problems and difficulties that she'd had. But again, we're talking about kind of personal stories, and there's a thing, I think, where when we individualise stuff, we're kind of not looking at kind of, you know, some people would say we're not looking at broader social problems, social difficulties.
Yeah, it does let society off the hook, doesn't it? And the government, it's just like, you know, if you let the genie out of the bottle, talking about your mental health, it's kind of patient heal thyself, isn't it?
Yeah.
Forget structural oppression or
so what you've
economics.
Got is, what you've got is the kind of
juiced, cupcake.
Yeah, the juiced kale military industrial complex, the kind of well-being industry where you get, you know, 10 ways to vanquish your depression, 10 ways to deal with your anxiety, all those kind of listicles that you see online. But you don't generally see kind of 10 things you can do today to help with your psychosis.
Yeah, 10 things to take to hospital when you've been sectioned.
Or
if you have time to pack your bag.
If you're lucky enough to be able to plan that and yeah. then actually get anyone to listen to you and allow you into hospital if you wish to be.
But 10, could... 10 articles to read when you're waiting for a bed out of county.
Yeah, so it's 10 articles to read on the train when you're on your way to Shropshire, to the only unit left. But you don't see sort of like 10 ways that you can minimise the effect of trauma on your life now.
And you know what the answer to that would be is, you know, don't be traumatised, everything's positive and fine.
Well, there is that kind of reflex, isn't there? That in some ways, if you hadn't done this, then you would have been all right if you had done that earlier. So in some ways, the stuff with Harry's kind of interesting in that because it's kind of framed in a sort of sense of regret. He's like, well, if I'd sought help sooner and it was only other people that told me that I needed help, everything would have been all right. We find it much more difficult to think about things as being something that you carry with you all the time as an experience over something that's a series of episodes. We still talk about like depressive episodes rather than someone having an ongoing experience of depression. And, you know, for my experience, with my own difficulties, it's kind of always there. It's just whether it's turned up or turned down on the level, you know. So it's always kind of you are always that person having those things. It's just whether it gets to the limit of your resources to be able to kind of overcome them. Where does this leave us with Harry and the royal family and our broad wave of stigma fighting? Where does this leave us at the end of this conversation?
The start of another one. It's carrying on. And that, you know, that's good. The fact that people are talking about mental health is a good thing, and it has to start somewhere. I know that both of us would really like, I think, and a lot of us would really like for conversations about maybe the more, not difficult, but the more disabling types of mental health problems being out there. And we do want people to talk about it in government and policy. I think even though the anti-stigma campaigns have been going on for such a long time, it feels like there's a new one every week, but it is still in its infancy. And I think we do exist a little bit in our kind of bubble where we were in the mental health world and we can only ever really see positive and supportive comments, but that isn't a lot of people's experiences. That's not everyone's experiences. So until it is everyone's experience, where they can talk about this stuff and be welcomed, be comfortable and feel safe having these discussions, we still have work to do, I think.
The thing that I always think is every year there's going to be more people who become unwell, and for them it's new and it's different and it's difficult. And like, you know, getting to the point where the kind of ground has already been laid for people is kind of the work that we're doing. It's kind of a sort of mental health anti-stigma tarmacking is what we're doing to make sure that other people can have a lovely, clean, smooth ride into the future.
Yeah.
I think, is that also we finished then?
Yeah. Okay, well, thanks for listening, everybody. I've been Seanine Molloy-Vaughan, and I've been with...
Mark Brown.
And if you want to find out any more about us, go to bbc.co.uk/arch, or you can tweet us at BBC Arch or find us on Facebook.
Thank you.